I give up. I'm at a point where I just give up with it. I don't give a shit about it anymore. My entire focus now is not on that. YouTube is as far as for what we're doing, it's a failing platform. So,
I mean, I don't get any money out of it anyway, but you know, if it helps you a little bit and it gets me some promotional stuff, then fine. But yeah. You know, I mean,
it's just a joke now. It used to be a very good viable platform, and they've destroyed it for the little people. Mm-hmm. It's really good for the people who are already big. Mm-hmm. You know, those people do fairly well, but for the little people, it's just they've made it all insanely difficult.
Yeah, sounds like they just kind of like shut the door on it.
But. And I only do it so that the people that like listening live, you know, can listen live or watch live, whatever you want to call it, and you know, because you know it's an easy place to put it. And then I put the audio on to Anchor for the podcast. So, mm-hmm. But anyway, let's start this thing tonight, Holly. This is the part deux, right?
Yeah, deux.
Deux. Come on, there we go. There we go. Tonight on Slip Into the Night, episode 7. I may ejaculate on my tummy.
Wow. You know, and I was just thinking that music reminds me of like what would these like little 5-minute shorts on public television, which was like that the astronomer, they weren't astrology, they were astronomy, but he would like walk into the stars and tell the astronomy.
Oh, yeah,
that was
yeah.
Jack Horkheimer, Star Hustler.
Yeah.
Star Hustler.
Now, if you look over here in the night sky,
right,
you can see Mars is right next to the moon, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or, you know, he would point out the comet. There is going to be a comet flying through the east, and then he would have, like, the cheesy graphic. And
right. I remember when Halley's Comet came through. I was really young, and I actually saw it in the sky. That was amazing. And I was really glad, like after I saw it, I remember as a kid being really glad that I had saw it or mm-hmm. I'd seen it because, you know, I probably would never see it again in my lifetime. Cause it's like what on a 70 something year elliptical loop or some shit. So it won't be back until I'm like in my 80s or some shit.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was a thing, like, that was happening, like, when it passed through, mm-hmm. you know, it was all over the news, it was go out and look at it, and, yeah. And then it was, like, a little smudge in the sky, right? That's what I remember.
It was, it depended, I had a telescope at the time, mm-hmm. And it was pretty cool if you could see it, I happened to get a good view of it, one night. And like I said, I was really glad that I did. I can remember as a kid being grateful that I got a chance to see it, which was really cool.
Yeah, I remember going out because, you know, we had the big field and we're out in the country, so it's really dark. And we'd go out with my dad's binoculars and look at it. And amongst other star things, it's one of my love of stargazing is my childhood of going out at night with my dad and just looking at the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember looking for that comet, and then later on there were a few less famous comets that came through, and we would go out and find them. And it's a great thing to do, like just go out and wonder and feel like so small amongst that big starry sky.
Oh yeah. Well, I've said many times, you know, if you want to have a sense of pure wonderment or feel like really small, like go into a field with no light. You know, and stare up at the sky, you know, get a real concept of how fucking tiny you are in the universe. And it's just all open space up there. It just goes on and on. There is literally next to no end. There is an end, supposedly. I mean, it's just it's very limitless, and it's still expanding too.
Yeah, it's really hard to conceive of how actually big it is.
Yeah. Ah, we have kitty sounds.
Yeah, you know, the minute we sit down to chat, they've been sleeping all day.
And of course they come out to play. Holly has two Siamese cats. What are their names, Holly?
Well, yes, they live with me. They are my daughters. Their names are Merlin and Augur, also known as Augie. So they have these kind of like funny little names.
They are noisy and they're Siamese cats. And anyone who doesn't know, Siamese cats are fucking crazy.
Yeah.
They're nutbags.
Yeah, so they sleep like 20 hours a day, and then they are like on speed the other 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah. So. They're cool. I mean, I'm not a cat person at all. One, because I'm allergic. But I've met the cats when they will come in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And they're cute. They are cute cats because I like the way Siamese cats look, but I'm just not a cat fan. Not a cat guy.
Yeah. Me as well. But you know, my family, my daughter loves the kitties. They needed to come to our house here. They were with dad. So for a while they need to come here. So kitties are with us right now. And, so one of those things you do for love is, you let your kid have cats when you're not a cat fan. They are okay.
Yeah.
They've grown on me.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there is the dog, Indy, too. So she's.
Yeah, I'm just not a cat person at all. Like I said, mostly because I'm allergic. So it's very hard for me to be around cats. I have to get used to them. And even then, it's very on and off. I'd be hesitant to be around a dog like nowadays too. Like if I haven't been around him because of the way I am, like I'll just break out from the hair.
Mm-hmm.
So
speaking of that and tying it into our topic, you know, I think animals have different kind of energies and energetic attributes, and this kind of is like the idea of your spirit animal and. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. And a lot of times what that is it seems like, from my perspective, is that there's some kind of either energetic resonance or that animal has something that you feel like some kind of energy that you don't have that you want to kind of model after or bring into your experience. Like maybe you're a more timid person and you need more lion energy or whatever. Or maybe you very much identify with being a lion and the strength of the lion. I mean, animal symbolism is one way that we have described energy throughout time. You see it in the zodiac with like the most of the astrological signs are animal derivatives. Not all of them, most of them. There's lots of mythology that talk about animals and mythological animals. Lots of times when, you know, with the shamanic traditions where you work with animal spirits, you have an animal totem or a medicine animal, or you're, you know, it's kind of the spirit animal thing, which is a little bit of a looser interpretation of that. But it essentially it is kind of using the animal as a symbolism for a certain kind of energy.
Mm-hmm.
What's your spirit animal, Chris?
My spirit animal? Oh, I have no idea. I never really get into any of the shamanic traditions, and I never get into like looking into like where I saw myself as like my spirit animal energy. I always like wanted to be a titmouse. I always thought if I could come back as a titmouse, that would be like really cool. I think they're cool looking birds. Just fly around all day.
That is not the bird that you assaulted its baby.
No. No. No, that was not the bird that I was the Beastmaster with.
You know, that's a good way of getting bad energy with another species.
With here. A spirit animal. I had always like wanted to be like I said, like a titmouse. Like I always like birds because they could fly. But I never really went down those paths. Katie says goats for me. If you hadn't seen it, Katie put up a picture today of herself with a goat. It was cute as hell. If any of you know Katie and you haven't seen it, you should check that out.
Capricorn is a goat.
Capricorn. Yeah, and so was Black Phillip there, the goat that was the devil in the movie The Witch. Have you seen that one?
I don't think so. You'll have to send me a meme.
It's The Witch was a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was a horror movie. I can't remember who did the movie. The director. It was really stylistic. It was very artistically done. As a period piece set in like the colonial times in the northeast of America. Mm-hmm. And it's about this family that gets cast out of the village that mm-hmm. they're in for the way that they practice Christianity. Mm-hmm. And it's a story of how this witch that supposedly lives out in the woods that is like tormenting this family. It's pretty cool. It's an interesting story.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Perpetuating the evil witch myth, though.
Right, the evil witch myth and goats. Well, it's called The Witch, and I think with that type of stuff, I think you have to look at it like these have been stereotypical things that have been around forever. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been good incarnations of witches. It's just that. By and large, when we think of it, we think of the fucking Wicked Witch of the fucking West, you know, right. Shit like that. You know,
or Salem,
right? Those are the types of things that we think of. But you know, by and large, you know, like I said, it's not necessarily the truth. It's just the canon. It's the thing that we see. Like we think of witch, we think of cauldrons and fucking.
Well, it's like pop culture, like
Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah, you know, storytelling and stuff, but that is not necessarily like what, you know, one, that practicing witches are like, and two, maybe not even historically, that's what witches were ever like, you know, but I think one thing that is tapping when you see the witch that's out in that kind of excluded person, you know, there is this kind of generalized or stereotype of, you know, that marginalized, angry female who lives on the outskirts of society, and, you know, because she's enraged or whatever, she's using her very negative energy for like basically black magic purposes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of that is misinformation too. A lot of those people who are outcast or who are called witches early on, it was misinformation. Those people weren't necessarily witches. People were ignorant to a lot of things for a very long time.
Right, and you know, this idea of that witches having like certain attributes like moles or like growths on the body mm-hmm. to nurse demons and that kind of thing, which led to during the witch hunting of like basically taking these women and stripping them down and humiliating them to find anatomical features that would indicate that they are nursing demons and evil spirits from their body.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it just was, and often these were people who were poor. They were, you know, somehow on the fringe of society because they were alone and they didn't have, you know, the regular protection of a male head of household to, you know, so they were kind of doing it on their own and didn't really have any kind of social support either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was kind of this kind of really bad thing. Although, you know, even further back in time, they may have just been the women who, and sometimes men too, because there is a tradition of, you know, wizards in the during the witch hunt were also hunted down. Men who were like herbalists and not particularly ascribing to the Christian religion, and they were, you know, living out in nature, harvesting things, mm-hmm. living amongst the natural cycles, and then, you know, viewed as witches or wizards.
Right.
As well. So it wasn't a strictly female
right.
stereotype.
But to get back on track, you know, the whole the goat in that is sort of like a spirit type of animal. No.
Well, you're right. The goat is like there's a whole lot of symbolism with the goat being like there's a lot of contrast in mythology about the sheep and the goats, and the sheep right. are the well-behaved ones. The goats
got funky fucking eyes.
And the goats are a little bit, you know, crazy. They're less desirable. They're like out there. They're you know, I grew up on a farm too. You know, for the most part, the sheep are flocking. They're pretty easy to handle. And the sheep are the goats are the mischievous ones. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like a little bit more defiant. And in any kind of society, it's often the ones that are defiant, the ones that question authority, and that kind of have that more of that think for yourself goat attitude that cause trouble and sometimes become targets. This is why you get that phrase scapegoat. Who's the scapegoat? Who's the one that's going to get blamed for it because they're a little bit out of line.
Right.
And they're the one that is going to be made an example of to keep the rest of the herd in line.
Yeah, but
very subversive thing for me to say, but
yeah, so
now I see it.
These shamanistic traditions, and even sometimes in like the witchcraft or Wiccan traditions, you know, they will, if familiars are a little different, but it's kind of like a spirit animal energy.
Agreed, yeah.
So you've got in the shamanic traditions, you've got people who are choosing, or some would say that they don't even choose it, that it gets chosen for them in some way, but some type of a totem animal, spirit animal, and then that energy is somehow infused into you, you know, by taking on the quote unquote powers of whatever animal it is, that you are attuned to, you are in essence drawing upon that energy and bringing it into yourself. And I think the same thing could be said about, like I was saying before, about familiars, whereas like, you know, these, different, like I said, whatever the case may be, witch, Wiccan, druid, whatever, you know, who has this type of a familiar, they've chosen this creature, you know, albeit whatever it may be, a dog, a cat, you know, maybe it's a fucking turtle, I don't know. But they may choose that thing, and that's a part of their tradition. So it becomes part of that energy. I think.
Right. My understanding is it is a familiar, is an actual physical animal that you have a connection with.
Correct.
Whereas, you know, my experience is more the shamanic line,
a familiar is an animal that you choose.
Correct. A living, breathing animal that you choose.
Correct.
Or perhaps maybe it comes into your life like a cat that is.
Right. I mean, it could happen yeah. in that sense too. But, mm-hmm. and I think by having that connection, therein is that energy transfer.
Right.
You know, like they would say like, depending upon, you know, to take this on a, like a role playing D&D type thing. Like if you had a familiar in a D&D game, dependent upon what it was, would be what your bonuses would be. Do you get what I mean by that?
Right, because the familiar animal would bring some kind of attributes with it.
Right, like an owl might impart more wisdom, or a lion might, or not a lion, that would be like a little too big, but you know, like a big hunting dog or something might impart more strength, or you know, so on and so forth. Or loyalty, or whatever the case may be, I don't know. Yeah. But you get the point anyway. You know, so there's some type of energy transference there, and I get what you're saying. There is a difference. I'm just saying that in choosing these animals, these familiars, that is also in some way a connection with an animal and that animal's energy.
Oh yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
But in the shamanic tradition, it's very different.
Well, when it tends to be non-physical, mm-hmm. and you are going to do, oftentimes these animals are either brought to you by another shaman and it's a spirit animal, or you're going on a, you know, spirit journey, you know, a shamanic journey into the other world, and you're finding a spirit animal guide. Sometimes they're teachers, sometimes they're what they call a medicine animal that is there to help you heal something about yourself. Mm-hmm. So when I was back in shaman school, one of the things that happened was that I had to retrieve a soul piece that had fractured off. Mm-hmm. And in order to like reintegrate this soul piece into my energy field, I needed some help, and a spirit animal, medicine animal came to me while I was on this shamanic journey. It was like a trance thing, and in this trance, this animal came to me to help me reintegrate this energy into my energy field. So, I mean, for listeners who aren't really like on board with any of that, you know, just tune out for a minute, you know, because that is a very specific shamanic type of experience that may not make sense for everyone, but it makes sense for me. And that's goes into kind of, can bits of your energy break off? Sometimes you have to go back and like reintegrate it, and you know, or not, depending on how you believe that you experience this existence. Mm-hmm. But, and there's been several times that I have had worked with spirit animals, and sometimes they have made very much sense to me why that animal came to me. And other times I have been just like completely like, huh, that was exactly not what I was going to expect to show up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know like when you're doing things in ritual magic, you're attuning yourself to vibrations. Mm-hmm. You know, you're trying to create these vibrational energies, and you're trying to tune yourself to that. It's like tuning in a radio. Mm-hmm. You know, you're basically trying to get to a certain frequency, and once you're there, then you're kind of ready to perform the rite, mm-hmm. as it were.
Yeah.
You know, there's not much that has to do with anything with like animals. There is, you know, symbolism. You know, the shamanic tradition is more natural, based around animals. You know, in witchcraft and Wicca, that's more of a natural based religion, as is the Druid practice. But you know, in my case, the things that I experienced, it was more of a, like I said, it was everything was very ritualistic, but you got yourself into a certain place, like mm-hmm. in the teachings that I went through, like you would learn your rituals in a certain order. And you would start performing them, starting with the one, your first ritual, which is nothing more than a relaxation ritual. It's just to get you, your mind and your body relaxed. It's kind of a mini meditation, if you will. which you do every day. Mm-hmm. You know, and then in the practice that I get into, you did these things every day. So it would give you sets of rituals to do every single day. Mm-hmm. You get, you know, you didn't have to necessarily do them at the same time or what, you know, whatnot, but you could. But you would build these sets of rituals that you would do, you would be, you know, building that energy. So you would start with that one, which is just mm-hmm. literally just a relaxation ritual, just a thing to get you there. And then you would do a banishing ritual. And then, you know, you might do like a circulation of your energies ritual, you know, tapping into those energies that you're already working with. Or you might do like simple meditations. All of these things, though, working with those energies, directing those energies, getting yourself into a place where you're sensitive to those things,
mm-hmm.
you know, or more so than you normally yeah. would be. Like one of the things they tell you about the relaxation ritual is that it, you know, it gets you more attuned into that space so that these, you know, this stuff flows through you better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, relax, just yeah. let it flow.
Right. Yeah. So that is a lot more akin to, I mean, in the shamanic tradition, I would say that kind of thing is the setting of ceremony or setting of sacred space where you do a little ceremony or a ritual to tune in to the sacredness of the moment, mm-hmm. which I think from the shamanic perspective, everything is kind of sacred all the time, but you have to have your right intention, which is kind of what we were talking about the other night. Mm-hmm. And so you do your opening of the directions ceremony to get you in the right frame of mind and start that way. I have taken some mediumship classes, and that is also very similar when you do what's in kind of getting yourself meditated, in a kind of a more energetic state by doing what they call sitting in the power, where you sit and you circulate energy up and down through the chakra system.
Right. That's very similar to the circulation ritual I was talking about.
Yeah. So you would move your energy up and down through the chakra system, making sure that they are open, making sure that you are clearly sending your intention. And when you take mediumship classes, they also tell you about setting energetic boundaries with non-physical entities, because you need to be very, very clear when you work with the non-physical beings so that they don't like follow you home or continue to talk to you when you're done or basically stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Jevin in the chat room, I tried to meditate back in the day, but kept hearing my brother snoring from across the house. Yes. And that is often a huge problem with people who try to meditate. And the thing that you have to do is continue to do it. You can't let those things continue to distract you. You have to accept them and move on. Just concentrate on your breath. Just keep concentrating on your breath. Mm-hmm. As these things come up, you let them come up and you just let them go. Like it isn't about, it is about clearing your head. But the idea is that your brain's always going and you're trying to separate between the thoughts. You're trying to get to those points where there's nothing. But of course you're going to have stuff come up. You're going to think about things. You're going to have stuff that your brain's all of a sudden going to focus on. You're going to have sounds. A lot of times what people will do is put headphones in. Put fucking mm-hmm. noise canceling fucking headphones in.
Yeah, listen to some like white noise or nature noise yeah. or that like instrumental music, and then just you know, to block out the distracting noises, and also learn about different types of meditation. There's like some types of meditation you just sit and you draw and doodle, and that helps your brain shift into that more meditative state. And there's also walking meditations where you're walking mm-hmm. out in nature and you're allowing the movement to help you shift into that.
Yeah, I actually took a meditation class years ago. This was back when I was in high school. What the guy that held the class, one of the first things we did was we took a walk to a beach down a hiking trail.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I don't want anybody to talk.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, just walk. We can talk when we get there. You know, we can talk about the experience once we're there, but you know, until we're there, we don't talk. And it was great. He was an awesome guy. Great guy to talk to. He was a theology major. And he was the one that explained that confession was put into place so that they could keep an eye on the people. And that they forget that. It was a really cool class, and it made me realize that meditation is more than sitting in like the typical, what you would call lotus position. Mm-hmm. And you know, breathing in and out or going om or whatever. There's more to meditation than just that. But meditation in and of itself is all about attuning yourself. You know, it's all about getting yourself to that energy. But that energy of like nothingness. You know. And I don't do it nearly as much as I should. It's barely existent, if at all, in my life. I probably should meditate daily. It'd be a fucking great thing for me to do. And I have considered like taking up some form of a daily practice again too. I've actually considered it recently. Mm-hmm. Just because I think it would give me some structure, or some type of structure. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, it would be what am I going to call this? A practice, a disciplined practice. So sometimes just having one, one thing that you practice day in and day out adds some structure to your life. And stuff.
Right. And I think I could benefit from the energy of it. You know, I think it might get me into a different headspace, might help me with different projects that I'm working on right now. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the way you should use those types of energies. You know, you should utilize them.
Well, right. I think that's what like all the sages from all time, you know, like you see the stereotypical like Buddhist monk who's, you know, meditating in a cave and they're doing it to kind of get to know themselves better and to kind of get mastery of their own mind, you know, more so than anything else.
Right.
To have discipline and control over their own energy.
Yeah. And they're also, you know, that stereotypical person is also trying to achieve enlightenment. You know, there's always that air of, you know, the monk in the cave. That's the guy that's like, you know, they're trying to achieve enlightenment. They're trying to become closer to quote unquote God or whatever the case may be, you know?
Right. I think that's a whole conversation about what enlightenment is.
What's that?
I said I think we could have a whole nother episode on just what enlightenment is.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm just saying that I think that's a stereotypical vision of that.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so those people seem to be meditating for a quote unquote higher purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whereas your general everyday person, excuse me, is doing it, you know, maybe just to better themselves or, you know, be calmer throughout the day, whatever the case may be. You know, people take meditation classes and take meditation to be able to handle daily life better. Maybe that's to handle stress or.
Right. Well, that's exactly why I started doing it.
Right. And this and life is a rat race. You know, mm-hmm. People were not designed to work in cubicles. You know, human beings were not designed to work in the ways that a lot of people get forced into the molds of. And it's too bad. And we have to learn ways to deal with the stresses that come from that. Or the companies need to change that shit, which probably isn't going to happen anytime soon. Because companies suck.
Right.
They get into modes of the way things work, and change is very hard to do, or it comes too often and things don't change in the right direction. But yeah, we get stuck in these modes of, you know, the way we work, or the work week, which is also too long, which, you know, right. it has been proven. It's been proven that the work week is too long. Like, it's been scientifically fucking proven that 40-hour work weeks are, that 32 is far more productive.
Right. So my first experiences with meditation, I mean, we're younger, but like the first really, like, you know, I took a few yoga classes in college, and then I went out into the working world and I forgot. You know, I just didn't do that stuff until I got to the point where I had been sitting so long and hunched over a desk that I had a lot of shoulder pain, mm-hmm. a lot of neck pain. I had a lot of eye strain,
yeah.
and my neck and shoulders were just rigid. And I was getting numbness and tingling down my arm. And so I got sent to physical therapy by my doctor. And the physical therapist says, look, your muscles are too tight right now. You are holding so much stress in your body. And so what happens is the human body will hold on to energy, be it good energy or bad energy. But if it's holding on to stressful energy, it will kind of coil itself up. Mm-hmm. And she's like, what we first have to do is actually relax your muscles before we can re-strengthen them and retrain them to be, have your posture be correct and proper again. And so, you know, they had me get on the table, and a good 30 minutes of my first several weeks was learning how to meditate, learning how to listen to my breath, and to like start with the out breath, releasing that tension that was trapped in my body. And it wasn't for enlightenment, and it wasn't for, you know, but those, you know, mm-hmm. any kind of like really higher spiritual growth. It was all for relaxation, peace of mind, reduction in anxiety, because, you know, with deadlines and stuff that I had with my job, I had a lot of anxiety, which, you know, was preventing me from sleeping very well. And so there are definite, like, just physiological benefits with learning how to manage your own energy, and to learn through meditation on how to let some of this heavy stuff that's kind of stuck in your system go. Mm-hmm. There's other ways to do it, but that is like kind of like the easy basic way. Yoga is another way. Once I got my body stronger, you know, yoga would, you do a lot of specific moment movements to move a lot of your tissues. You can hold energies in your tissues. And then at the end, you do a very like deep relaxation, just stay as still as you can. And it was really amazing to me that there would be times that I would go to yoga and I would move certain muscles and release emotions, and I would just start crying, and I would have a flood of feelings go up, and I would just have this realization like, wow, I'd forgotten about this, and all of a sudden it's coming up now. And I just let it out and through and clear it out of my system in that way. And walking in the woods will do that too. Mm-hmm. Just moving your body. So, you know.
Yeah, I used to love, one of the things I used to love about hiking was that generally the people that I went with, we didn't talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was very rare that we would talk between each other as we were hiking.
Mm-hmm.
We would talk before we would leave, and generally, you know, we would. I mean, there would be a little bit here and there, but for the most part, we just were quiet. We might smoke a joint or something somewhere along the way, get to the top, would shoot the shit at the top. But, you know, the way up and the way down, we would generally be quiet,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just kind of enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and yeah. And that's the way you should do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to, you know, if that's what you're going to do, I mean, I think you should.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to do it.
You know, and if you're more open to experimentation, you can go and you can try Reiki, which is hot energy that's from the hands. And it is more on the woo-woo side. My feeling is people who are providing a Reiki service should not be touching you. And it should be hands over the body and just helping to promote, kind of like in the same way that meditation does, promote your mind to get in a state of relaxation to help you shift your own energy,
mm-hmm.
help you release energy from your own body in places that might be tense.
Right. Yeah, and I can agree with that.
And I have personally found that to be true for Reiki. However, I think that's one of those experiences that you need to talk with the practitioner first, kind of know their approach. They are, you know, they are attuned to an energy. They are not medical practitioners. So they shouldn't be giving you medical advice. They shouldn't right. be manipulating your body in any way. But that said, I think that how Reiki can promote the energy of relaxation and can get your mind in a healing space is extremely beneficial.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if used properly. As with any of these things, if used properly.
Absolutely.
You know, and Holly's right. These people should not be talking to you about your health. You know, anyone who's worth their salt would know that. And they, you know, they shouldn't be, I don't think they should even try inserting themselves any further than just that. If they're going to be that. You know, if you're going to be a Reiki person, then do that. You know, help people with energy. But other than that, you know, just don't. Leave it at that. Be good at that. You know, because once you start inserting anything else, it becomes biased. And it's no longer a neutral energy thing. In my opinion, anyway.
Well, and I think you have to be very careful between the boundary between just Reiki energy and energy transfer or in promoting a healing energy and faith healing where you are like, I don't know, channeling some kind of divine interventional thing.
Right.
And perhaps promising something that is not necessarily, feasible. You know, feasible. And you have to be, you know, very careful about what any kind of Reiki practitioner or energy healer is offering you.
Yeah.
I think there are some very good, skillful people out there. I think it has a tremendous opportunity for fraud.
Oh, yeah. Huge. Huge opportunity for fraud. You know, because a lot of these people, when they have these people come into their lives, they buy into everything. I've seen it happen with people so many times. You know, people getting into the new age religions, quote unquote. Over the years, I've seen people just fucking fall into it. They just go. And they'll buy into so much bullshit. And when you bring someone into your life like this, it's a very personal thing, you know, because you're letting this person in your space, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. And, you know, in doing that, a lot of these people, you know, buy into the ideology of the person whom they're working with. Or who's working with them, you know, the Reiki person. And that person kind of becomes almost mentorish in a lot of ways. And I've seen this happen time in and time out in a lot of different things. And it just becomes kind of weird. So I don't know, like, how much of that should be, you know, brought into it. I just don't think it has a place there. If you're going to be that, be that. Be the Reiki energy person. You know, and leave the other stuff to other people. Because I just think, you know, once you start going down other paths with it and introducing that with what you're doing, it gives it a bias. It's no longer a neutral energy. Because the perspectives have changed on both, for both parties. I mean, I don't know if that makes sense. But.
Well, I think I'm following what you're saying. And what I would tell listeners is that you need to use discretion if you are using a healing modality that's outside of like regular medicine. However, also working in the medical field, I would say you also need to use discretion in working with your doctors and your healthcare team.
Yeah.
Understand what is the scope of practice and be very clear on what you are willing to have someone who's practicing a energy healing modality on you. Talk to them what's going to happen first, what's going to happen after, what to expect. Because I have found it to be quite powerful, but it is very important to, you know what is your comfort level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you know, don't go in for a full on shamanic ceremony if you are not like spiritually or emotionally fully ready for like what that might be, what that might mean, you know. So yeah. You've got to like kind of really self explore and have some self understanding when it comes to what that kind of experience is going to be for you.
Mm-hmm.
And be very self-aware and conscious that you're choosing it. Ask questions. Oh, kitties. It's really funny. We all of a sudden the kitties just tonight really want to be present in this conversation. So we have like animal totems tonight of the two kitties who want to join in and be a part of the energy with our listeners tonight. So getting back on track, I think there are other things too. Crystals, there's a lot of crystal workers out there. Just crystals are technologically valuable. They put them in watches, they put them in lasers.
Mm-hmm.
They can hold energy. They can magnify energy.
I got a few right here.
You got a few. I've got more than a few.
Get one here. Mm-hmm. Get one there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Crystals can definitely shift energy.
Yeah, I got one there.
Yeah, that's a great one. That's something that you can easily explore on your own. Go to a crystal shop, buy a few, see how they feel, carry it around in your pocket. You know, go mm-hmm. for some inexpensive ones. If you like it, buy a more expensive one. Mm-hmm. Know that some of them have competing energies and they don't like to be together. Some of them work or blend better than others. But because it's a dense substance, it's a crystalline substance, it can hold energy very well. So you know, do a little research on how to work with crystals with discretion, since there's a lot of woo-woo stuff on the internet.
Not only that, but like books. There's tons uh-huh. of books out there. It's very hard to find truth out there when it comes to these subjects.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest to people when working with crystals, try to find like the running theme amongst the systems when it comes to crystals. And that will give you your general idea of the energies. There's all kinds of different types of work you can do with it. Crystals, much like animals, each have their own type of different energy. So it's the same type of thing, you know, like a quartz crystal is different from an obsidian quartz crystal. Or a clear quartz crystal is different from a rose quartz or an amethyst, which is also a form of quartz. You know, and you have different things. But they all have different energies and different ways you can utilize those energies. But I would say, you know, as I do with a lot of things, that these things are very artistic in nature. You may not find that any of the systems work in that way for you. You may find that you feel different energies with these things. And then I would say, and I would encourage you to look into that and try that and work with that, if that's what works for you. Because you have to remember, this is all about mindset and about perspective and putting yourself in those mindsets, basically putting yourself in those energies, those vibrations, and then utilizing those in a positive way or negative if you want to. I mean, mm-hmm. That's completely up to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's all about your personal journey. And one of those other things that I talk about energy is, and you know that this is one of my great things that I personally use a lot as a tool is your astrological readings, the positions of the planets and the energy of the planets and the, you know, it can be a great psychological tool to have, bring yourself some understanding and understand when you look at your birth chart, what the different energies in your birth chart are, what kind of energies that are setting you up for. And, you know, the different signs of the astrological signs or talk about that mythic journey and the evolution of different archetypes. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you are interested in mythology and archetypes, astrology can bring you lots of those mythologies, lots of like that hero's journey, and can bring you some perspective on what the energies are in your own life.
Yeah. And I know that you and I have talked about it, that you're considering doing readings for people.
I do them.
I know you do them now, but you're.
I do them off and on for people you were considering requests.
opening it up.
Slowly.
And Holly and I have been talking about how she can do that and how, like, because I think personally that with the work that she does a great job when she just does these charts. She draws them by hand and then she does these nice write ups. And I'm assuming that you're saying that if you would do these, that you would go over them with the people.
I think eventually that's one of the things that I could
but you could also like just send them the write up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So her and I are working on how she can do that and, figure out a way, you know, a price that makes sense. For what she's giving people. And you know, Holly's got her own PayPal and everything. So you could, you know, easily be able to send her the money. So we'll figure that out and I will probably have people get in touch with me for the time being. You know, if there's any interest, shoot me an email at the40andslip@gmail.com. That's the 40andslip@gmail.com. And I can direct that to Holly once and if she decides to do that. So
if anyone listening to this is interested, though, it is important to know that what is needed is you have to be willing to share your birth date and time of birth and place of birth with me so that I can do the astrological chart. So that is the important information. Yeah. And except that I am also working a regular 40 to 50 hour muggle job. Yeah. And my It's unknown to me, my ability to turn around, how quickly I can turn around a chart reading for someone. But it is something that I've been studying for quite a while, and I've been considering to put out there as a public offering.
Yeah. So
for people who are interested in that perspective,
we'll figure it out what she's going to be doing, and then we'll present it to you all. But if anybody has any interest now, you can shoot me an email, and I will talk it over with Holly. You know what, you know how much of a little bit of a buzz we get, and maybe it's something that she can handle right now. So, but I have to cut the show a little short tonight, Holly. For one, because we've done two this week, and two, because I have to go get boxes because I sold some shit. So, yeah.
Well, I'll be here playing with my pussies, and you can go find some boxes. That will definitely not get you monetized.
Why don't you add some vibrations to that mix? Freaking weirdo. Anyhow, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Slip Into the Night, Episode 7, Energy and Vibrations, Part 2. This is probably a topic that we will touch base on again. It's a pretty wide topic, so it weaves in and out of a lot of the things that we're going to talk about. I don't have any idea what we will be talking about next week on the program, but I'm sure that Holly and I can figure something out to entertain the masses with. Until then,
if not, just entertain ourselves.
Yes. Until then, good night from both of us here. We hope you all have a wonderful and beautiful week.